Hi, my name's Eric Lyle, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Eric.
My sobriety date, September 18th, 1985, and I do have a home group I'm active in. Got a sponsor, actually, probably 6-8 months ago when my sponsor of about 15 years had moved down south. We both agreed to a timeline where he would find a new sponsor in Florida and I would have a new sponsor here, and it all worked out well. You know, I've always had a sponsor since the day I walked in here. Well, pretty much about my third meeting out of treatment, I was assigned to my sponsor. You know, somebody walked up to me, and I think there was some intervention by a third party who said, this guy needs a lot of help. Could you sponsor him? And this guy walked up to me at the Gannon Group and said, hi, my name's Carmen, and I'm going to be your sponsor. And we're going to go to the big boy tonight after the meeting and talk. And he was the man that walked me through the steps. And he moved south years ago, and I do not even know if this guy's sober today. But I do know that what he shared with me those first couple years came straight from our text. He was a big book literalist. you know, he said there's different ways to do this thing. Sobriety, and not necessarily, he didn't necessarily mean Alcoholics Anonymous, but he says, you know, we don't have a lock on this, but this is my experience. And my experience is that I did what these steps suggested, and not only was I relieved of, you know, the obsession to drink, but I was relieved most days of the bondage of self. And so we started reading the book, and you know, he had me read through the text, and then we started going through the opinion, and you know, got to step one, and I understood all that stuff, and then I balked. Because what I did not want the solution to be was a spiritual solution. And that was all my ego. You know, my folks had raised me with a lot of morals and values and religious tenets. And, you know, I knew the right difference between right and wrong. What it boiled down to is I did not want my parents to be right. It really was, that was the case. I did not. So for 10 months, I went to a meeting every day and suffered from untreated alcoholism because I was miserable. I was probably more depressed my first 10 months in Alcoholics Anonymous than I was, you know, at the end of my drinking. And that was based on my wife's observations before and after. So I know it to be the truth. But, you know, at 10 months sober, I had to make a decision. Either I was going to drink and end my life, or I was going to surrender to a solution. And that's what I did. And a couple people walked me through 2 and 3 over that weekend, and you know, I talked with them about, with my sponsor, and I went home and told him about that experience, and he laughed. He says, okay, I was wondering if you were going to drink or do this thing. And he was pretty frank, and I understood that. You know, I was a knucklehead, and so immediately, you know, and I think what I'm trying to do is segue into this 9-step thing. I mean, immediately we started doing inventory. You know, and I understood the reason why we were doing that, because we needed to get the cause of, you know, what was the cause of my disconnect from God and other people? Because I couldn't live in right relationship with anybody. And, you know, we did this 4-step, and I did my 5th step with him. But more importantly, while we were going through that 4-step, he said, you know, you're going to hear a lot of things in AA, and some of them aren't the truth. And one of them is, after we do your 5th step, we're going to burn it. Because he said, we got this list that we got to make here shortly, like in the next week, because you're going to rapidly do 6 and 7 when you go home from this retreat. And we're going to write this list. And the people and institutions that you have harmed are on that 4-step. So you need that. And I like to talk about that briefly, just because I've cringed when I hear people say, oh, we had this ceremonial burning of the 4-step. And I'm thinking, that creates a lot of work because you got to do it again. You know, I'm just going to read something briefly. And this is on page 76. It's the first paragraph of what becomes the directions for 8 and 9. And, you know, we have completed step 7. We now need more action, without which we would find that faith without works is dead. Let's look at steps 8 and 9. We have a list of all persons we have harmed and whom we are willing to make amends. We made it when we took inventory. We subjected ourselves to a drastic self-appraisal. Now we go out to our fellows and repair the damage in the past. The attempt to sweep away the debris which has accumulated out of our effort to live on self-will and run the show ourselves. If we haven't the will to do this, we ask until it comes. Remember, it was agreed at the beginning we'd go to any lengths over alcohol. I got to tell you that I drank from 11 years of age to 23. So there was a 12-year span when I was getting loaded. And my list was not that large. I didn't have enough time to harm a whole lot of people. But I had done some harms, you know. And when I wrote that list, you know, at the top of it was my parents. And I was really unable to understand how I could reconcile the harm to my parents, you know, when I was doing this initially. You know, because I was the kind of kid that at 14, 15, 16 years old would take off for 2 or 3 days and drink and some other stuff. I mean, it was the 70s and the early 80s. And my buddies would dump me off in my parents' front yard on a Sunday morning at 3 o'clock. And my mom would still be awake, and I'd walk in, and, you know, she'd be crying and not distraught and not sleep for a couple days and kind of come at me a little bit. And, you know, I said some nasty, disgusting, vile things to that woman about her and her religion and a whole lot of things. So when I got sober, I did not understand how I could correct that harm. And the same with my father, although he was somewhat, he was a little more laid back. But I had harmed those two tremendously, you know, and along the way, a couple schoolmates in high school, and obviously, you know, the young lady that was I lived with for a while and eventually married and got sober together with, you know, my in-laws, a sister that I had to make amends to, and a few other people in my employer. And, you know, when I completed this list and I went over it with my sponsor, you know, and, you know, whom and what happened was the easy part. Sometimes what the amend was a little bit more difficult for me to get to. And that whole idea that and Wilson and the others that contributed to that part of the book talk about this. Sorry doesn't get it. That's just an apology. It's not an amend. To amend something is to correct it, to change it. So how am I going to change these things that I did? And I talked about this with my sponsor, and he said, well, you know, yeah, there's some things here. There's money that you've stole from your parents. There's the emotional and spiritual harms that you've done to them. And that you deprived them of a relationship with a son. So I want you to tell me what you think that amend is going to be. And this is how I work this with my guys that I sponsor today. And sometimes they're way off base and sometimes they're spot on. You know, so we came to the conclusion that I would save up X amount of dollars, you know, to make a sincere attempt to correct that financial harm. And I was probably a year and a half, 2 years sober by the time this all kind of came together. And I went to my parents, and it was a summer day, and I sat them down, and I explained to them that, you know, my disease of alcoholism is based in fear and in selfishness, at least mine is. That's really the base of my disease, is fear and selfishness. And that I had stolen from them because I needed to get loaded. And this money was the start of what I need to repay to you. And they said, no, we don't want your money. And at first I thought, well, they have to take it. And my sponsor had mentioned this prior. He said, there's a possibility that they will not take your money. You have to make a sincere attempt to do that. And I did, and I kind of insisted, and they said, no, we don't want your money. And I said, well, how can I correct this harm? They said, the money thing is water over the dam. How can I be your son, is what I asked them. And my mom looked at me square in the eyes, and I'm dumber than the doorknob sometimes. She said, call me once a week. And I'm like, oh, okay. And that started a relationship again. Now, my parents had been real leery of me. The first year I was sober, they'd started to invite me to holidays. They did not know if I was going to show up loaded or not. And eventually, by this time, they were pretty confident I was sober and I meant business, you know. So I started calling my mom every week, and then I started stopping in unannounced a couple times a month, because they lived about 40 miles from where I was at. I started going down and taking care of their lawn. And I started going, my father was a Pittsburgh, he was a big Pittsburgh Pirates fan. And I remember one of my fondest memories is watching the Saturday game of the week with him in black and white, watching the Pirates, you know. So when there was a Pirates game on, I'd just show up and watch the ball game with him, because I knew he would be doing that. And at one point he looked at me and he said, You tell those people at AA, thank you for giving me my son back. And then I knew that I was right with that man. That took some time, you know. That took some time. So I started becoming a son to them that they hadn't had for a long, long time. And I had no expectation, but I knew it was right. We were in a right relationship, you know. And eventually my dad died when I was 7 or 8 years sober. He passed away, and they adopted me as an infant. They were in their early 40s. They adopted me as an infant. So my mom kind of joked around after I got sober, boy, we didn't know what we were buying. It was a whole lot of trouble for a lot of years. You know, eventually this relationship grew you know, I was not welcome in their home by the time I ended up getting sober. And about 10 years ago, it was in the summer, and my mom sat me down, and she had had her will revised, and, you know, my older sister, she was adopted, different birth parents, and she had some challenges. You know, my alcoholism pales in comparison to my sister's challenges. And she said, you know, I want you to take care of our affairs when I pass. And I just kind of looked at her and said, really? And she said, yeah. So she died about a month later. And, you know, I instinctively knew what I needed to do. In fact, this is really interesting. I was working with this new kid, and we went to Powell Avenue, and he came from a similar kind of situation from Pittsburgh and didn't know how he could financially amend what he had done to his parents and be a son again. And I shared with him my experience, and he's like, I just don't know if this is going to work, and blah blah blah. And go in the meeting, come out, Penny calls me and says, I don't know how to tell you this, but your sister just called me and told me your mom passed away. And this dude sat next to me, and he hears the conversation. He looks at me and he says, man, are you going to be okay? I says, I'm going to be fine, but I think there's clearly a message here for you, you know. And he just kind of looks at me, and I says, you know, I took care of that stuff with my parents. I was in right relationship with them because of the steps. If you don't get sober, it's likely you're not going to be in right relationship with your folks. And I know you want to be, but you got to do the action. So that was kind of interesting. But that whole next year, that whole process of, you know, cleaning out a home that they had lived in for 50 years and getting it ready for sale, and that whole deal, at times was a little bit of a pain, but it paled in comparison to the pain I put my parents through. And I knew, I was conscious that that was my last amend for my parents to do what they wished be done. And, you know, when it all closed out, and I could step back from it, you know, and say, oh, I was glad I was able to do that. And it certainly was humbling. And I knew the reason why I was able to do that was because of you folks and them 12 steps. Because I was incapable of doing anything like that, you know, when I at the end of my drinking. So that was a really nice experience, you know. A couple friends from high school, that went relatively well, you know. They saw me loaded and they saw me sober and they knew the difference. And you know, those were more emotional amends, you know. I went to my employer, and I don't know why I was still employed by this company, but, you know, I'd leave work on a Wednesday and show back up Tuesday, and I still had a job. I don't get it sometimes, because I'm not that tolerant today. I manage people, and I won't tolerate that, you know. It's like rehab and get sober or find another job, man, because I'm not going to do this. But I went to my employer. I mean, I used to show up and they'd tell me to go out in the yard on a forklift and I'd sleep it off. And, you know, they're paying me to be drunk. you know, and I sat down with the plant manager. And I said, you know, I'm in AA and I'm sober and I've really stolen from you for quite a few years. And I said, you know, how can I repay this? And he said, I tell you what, we'll put you in a supervisory position and put you on salary and we'll pay you this amount for 2 years. And at the end of that, you know, we'll call it even. You know, and you work about 50 hours a week. And I thought that was really fair. I think I came out on, that was very equitable. And so I did that and they promoted me in another position. I was there a couple more years. During this, you know, there was this guy that, he was a drunk that I worked with, and I couldn't stand this guy. When I first got sober, I had this real resentment about him, and he suggested that I pray for him, so I did that every day for about a month, and she says, how's that working with that guy? And I said, not very well, and she says, what do you mean? I says, I pray every day he'll die, and he's still alive. And I'm serious. That's how, where my head was at my first year sober. I started praying that he'd be given grace and peace like I've been giving him. I ended up supervising a guy for a year or two, and when I left, he retired before I left, and he thanked me for treating him well, and I knew I was right with him, you know. And, you know, the other amend for me really was with Penny, with my wife, and you know, when we came in, her sponsor, my sponsor, says, you know, you work her, your steps, she works hers. Don't get a divorce the first year or two. Don't give it a divorce till you're at 10, 11, and 12, and you've been doing that, maybe sponsoring somebody. Because you just don't, you know, this whole relationship was based on some really twisted ideals. And I mean, it really was, you know. I mean, my fear and selfishness kept me in that relationship for quite a long time, because I couldn't drink on one income because I only worked part-time, even though it was a full-time job, you know. I needed Penny's income to get loaded. And there was this kind of sick connectedness. I wouldn't even call it love. And I remember we were at the Marble Group on a Friday night. We went out to Spada's for dinner afterwards. And we had kind of decided that was the night we were going to make some decisions and make our amends to each other. And, you know, that part of our lives was so dark and so twisted and so violent that we both realized that if we were to stay sober at a minimum and married, then we had to let that stuff go. Because that was a, you know, that was a real ugly two-way street. and frankly, I can't ever remember a specific situation coming up since we got sober, made that decision that night, about the past in reference to kind of being attacking to the other person. You know, we just knew in a couple years sober, and we made a commitment to try to make this thing work that night. But we both knew that, you know, it was very violent and very dark, and, you know, it was just not healthy. And if we were going to stay sober and married, we couldn't bring that stuff up. And we just forgave each other and moved forward. And part of that amends, too, is the actionable things that we've done sober for each other, you know. It's like, for me, my amends to her over the years has changed. I mean, I remember she got ill when we were 7 or 8 years sober, and my first thought was based in self when I got this news from the surgeon and thought she was going to, my head went to, she's going to die and I'm going to have to raise this little girl by myself, you know. It's all about Eric and how this is going to affect him. And I call a buddy of mine, he says, "No, you knucklehead, this is your opportunity to be useful to your wife at another level." And I thought, yeah, that's true. And, you know, that was a part of my amends, to be there and do for her when she couldn't do it. I mean, she was sick. And she was sick for a couple years, and it was all she could do to, you know, get to work and get home and get up the next day and do it again. So, you know, Gretchen knows, I bring Brianna to the Marble on Friday nights with me so I could get a meeting in. And one of the ladies would grab Brianna and I'd be able to get a meeting in. But, you know, that was a very humbling experience, but I knew that was part of this process for us. That's just how it was going to be. You know, and that's just evolved. And today, you know, it's been years where, you know, we've been able to talk about things in life, in recovery or whatever, that we may see in the other person and not perceive that as an attack and be able to be in harmony. And that's all about that action we took at the beginning when we made our amends, you know. You know, there was one instance where we were out to dinner one night, and it talks about that in here, you know, except when to do so would injure them or others. And, you know, do you tell your wife about this stuff? Well, if you do, you can't bring anybody else into the mix. And we're out to dinner one night, and I ran into an old friend from high school, and Penny had went to a different high school. And I had absolutely no conscience about monogamy when I was dating her. And ran into this young lady. Well, she was in her 30s by this time. And Penny afterwards just casually asked me something. I said, "Well, you knew about that." And she's like, "No, I didn't know about her." And I'm like, "Oh." She says, "I get it, man. I shouldn't have even asked." So I knew at that point, you know, I should have, you know, am I dishonest or what? At that point, she's just like, "It's no big deal. It is what it is, you know." That's kind of been my experience with those amends, but every one of those was not based in "I'm sorry." It was based in some action on my part, you know. And I really think, you know, they talk about a lot of different scenarios in here, and actually I've encountered these things with guys I sponsor more often than my own amends, where they're like, "Well, how are we going to do this?" And I'll say, "How are we going to do this?" And sometimes they don't know. And, you know, there's financial amends to people or entities that they don't even know how to do. And I said, "Well, we have all kinds of creative ways. You know, you've got a wife and a kid now and another one on the way and a position. And I don't think walking into this place and telling them you ripped them off and we're running a scam is going to serve your family very well, because you may get arrested." Probably not, but that's a... "So why don't we try doing this? Why don't you list 5 charities? And every month you're going to give $10 to every one of these charities until that, what you think you stole from this entity over here, is cleared up." And they're like, yeah, that will work. And then I say, well, buy one of those little spiral notebooks, and I want each one of these amends on a page, and I want to see the list by date when you made the payment. Because you're an alcoholic. And if you're like me and you're not held accountable, you won't do it. You know, I get those kind of guys. I love them dearly, but man, they're just like me. You know, so those are the kind of things. You know, and I've had some things where, you know, it was beyond the scope of what I knew to do to suggest to them, and I had to go talk to some people. You know, but one of the most rewarding things for me is walking that guy through this thing, because I know the rewards that are going to come on the other side. You know, to be able to walk down the street today and not duck anybody and not having to do that for a lot of years is a wonderful feeling. And to know that I'm right with those about me most days, you know, and that kind of, you know, like I said in the beginning, you know, 4 and 5, 8, 9, and really that continuation of this in 10 is just so vital. And I think they're so connected, you know. And I'm not going to talk a lot about 10 other than give you one instance of the groundwork of 9 set me up. I was out of the country for about 12 days, and the first two of them were, I was in Mexico on work, and you know, the first day was 16 hours of travel, the next day was going into this facility of a customer and resolving an issue, and you know, trying to get back to Mexico City and 4 flight delays, and the next thing I know it's 1:30 in the morning and I'm standing in the Mexico City Airport Marriott, and Jorge's asking me if I want to sign up for the Marriott Rewards Visa card. And at that point I did not pause when agitated. And it just rolled right out of my mouth, and I'm not going to repeat it, but I immediately knew that I owed Jorge an amend. And I, you know, I looked at him square in the eye and I said, Jorge, you deserve to be treated with dignity and respect, and I just didn't do that. And you have self-worth, and I beat you up, and I'm truly sorry for that. How can I correct it? And he says, si, Senor Lyle, it's all okay. And I says, well, it's not okay, but I appreciate you forgiving me. And then he asked me if I wanted a bottle of water, and my first thought was, no, because that's going to take 15 minutes more out of the 2.5 hours I get to sleep before I got to get up. But I didn't say that. I graciously took his bottle of water and said thank you, and got up 2 hours later and went on my vacation. But the point of it was is that morning when I got up, I did everything that I do every morning. I did some readings and I meditated for a while. And given my mindset sometimes, it was a long day and things were not going Eric's way. And I didn't pause and connect with spirit, with my God, and somebody got harmed because of it. And I'm 30 years sober, and if anything for me, it reminds me of how delicate the balance can be sometimes with my recovery and my connectedness to God, to my higher power. So, you know, I was just glad I was able to immediately correct that as best I could and move on and not beat myself up about it. You know, I didn't, you know, justify it either, but I have to make amends sometimes. And I continue to do that. So I think I'm just about done.
Thank you, Eric. As I anticipated, I was not disappointed at all with what you had to share. But now we're going to put you in the hot seat.
Boy, that's a relief.
Okay, so at this time I'd like to ask, does anyone have any questions? And don't be shy. Great.
Thanks, Eric. Terrific job. My question is, when you're working with a guy whose parents or someone else close to him has passed away, what can you give us some examples of how they might try to make amends under those situations?
Sure. You know, if it's a financial amend, I really am big on finding some entity to repay that debt to. And preferably, actually, I just had this situation with a guy, and I said, what was dear to your mother's heart? First thing he said, Humane Society. I said, there's your answer. You know, actually, when I was settling my folks' estate, I realized that I had a resentment towards my mom. This was not something that was on my list 25 years prior. It was something that I realized I had that day, and it involved my sister. And, you know, she had passed. You know, she'd been dead for 6 months. And what I had to do was, I shared it with my sponsor, but I went to the grave and prayed for my mother and told her that, you know, I had this resentment, and I know it's based in self because it was about me having to be somewhat of a caretaker for my older sister. And that, you know, in my twisted mind, my mom had enabled her not to be able to function in society, when the reality is that she suffers from some mental illness. So I really resented my mom over that. I went to the grave and I prayed and I asked for her forgiveness for the anger that I had been carrying those few months. I mean, there was nothing else I could do other than do what she wanted me to do for my sister, whether or not I felt that was healthy for her. Because that's what my mom asked me to do. There was a point, though, where there were some things that were beyond what my mom had asked, and then I had to draw a line. But that's kind of getting off base. But yeah, I mean, if the loved ones or whomever passed, you know, the emotional and spiritual amends, I mean, you can do that in a formal setting, you know, at the priest or minister, at the gravesite, through some act throughout the year, or, you know, the financial kind of thing is really easy. Actually, financial amends are easy. You know, you go to work, you save some money, you don't buy yourself stuff when you should be paying amends off. But the emotional ones are more difficult. You know, that's how I resolved mine. That's how I amended mine. And that's what I suggest to my guys.
Okay. Another question. Here you go, Paul.
Hi, I'm Paul, and I'm an alcoholic. Thank you very much, Eric. My question for you is, how did you approach making amends to yourself for the harm that you had done yourself in your active disease?
I'm going to be very frank. It doesn't talk about making amends to myself in the big book, so I've never even broached that subject. I'm a selfish, self-centered drunk. And when I started living in spirit through the steps with the God of my understanding, I did not carry a lot of guilt about that. I mean, I have self-will. Everything I did willingly. Believe me, I knew every time I took a drink or got high, somebody was going to pay the price. That was a conscious decision on my part. This is my experience. I've never once thought about the harm that I did to myself. It's the experience I chose to create. And once I got sober, I chose to create a different experience. You know, and I could be wrong, but I don't think Wilson ever talks about amending to yourself in those directions. I mean, I hear that discussed some in the program, and I don't quite understand it. You know, yeah, I did harm to myself. I was a drunk, man. It's going to happen. You know what? Getting up every morning and doing my 11-step practice, that is amending the harm to myself. But I don't look at it like that. I look at that more as that's what I need to be centered to go out into the world and try to be in relationship with my fellows. That's just kind of how I see that one. Man, I'm sorry if I didn't answer your question.
Thank you. Eric, I'm Cindy. I'm an alcoholic. And what about amends you should make to people that you really shouldn't contact? Like, I have an amend I probably should make to an ex-husband that I had to put POWs out at, POAs out at, against and stuff like that, and to contact him would be strictly foolish.
but there were things that were my part that I should make amends for.
Well, in the directions, it talks about situations like this where it said it may not be possible, and I would consider that one of those situations that's not possible, but you can write a letter or an email and take care of that amend, because there could be some harm done to you, or especially to you. You just don't know how it's going to go. So I think you're given a direction to do that in the text, where it says it may not be possible to make these amends for whatever reasons, but you still can. I sponsor a guy, and he's a sweetheart. He's been sober quite a long time. He had a sister he really resented, but he owed her an amend. And he said, well, she's somewhere out in the Rocky Mountains. And I'm like, have you ever heard of Google? And he's like, this was quite a while ago before Google really took off. I said, dude, I could find her in 5 minutes. I guarantee you. And he was able to find her and call her and then send a letter. And they have not met physically, but he was able to clear his side of the street. I mean, especially today, you know, it's very easy to find people if you're willing to find them, if you own a bend. So I think, and I would suggest you talk with your sponsor about it, but I really think there's some direction in the book specifically for situations like that.
Just don't include your return address.
I was going to say, you would send a letter.
Right.
You would send a letter?
Mm-hmm.
You would? Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. Other questions?
Hi, I'm Kelly. It's not really a question, it's more of a thank you. I too have an ex-husband. And it's a real difficult situation I'm in too. He's not very easy to get along with, but I have to, for the sake of my children. I would love it if we just get along, but he just won't have it. And the reminder to just pray for him. Really turned a light on in my head, because I mean, it's pretty much the only thing I can do right now. Writing a letter wouldn't do any good right now, because on his part, he wouldn't have it. He wouldn't listen to it, or he wouldn't do anything about it. But just to pray for him. I was just talking to Maureen on the way over how much I dislike the man. And that's not doing me any good, but to try to just pray for him is a big reminder for me, and so I thank you for that.
You're welcome. I mean, one of the most difficult things for me early on was to pray for somebody else's grace and peace. I mean, that's just not where my head was at. I mean, it's taken years for that to evolve. I mean, you know, my first 5 years, I still had some pretty wacky thoughts. I still do it at times, you know? I was at my home group one summer, and we hang out and smoke cigars and drink coffee, and there was a guy there, and another friend of mine were there. We've been sober decades, and my friend was relating this thing, and this guy said, well, you know, that was a long time ago when you were drinking. He says, no, that was today. And I looked at him and said, why do you think we show up here and put the coffee pot on and set up the chairs? You know, I need, if left to my own devices, you know, I'll start thinking in the realm of self and fear. And I do that long enough, man, I'm going to take a drink. I mean, I will, because I don't like to feel that way. And I know what, there's two things will take that away, God or booze, you know? And long enough of thinking that way and not doing, like, you know, the later step practices, I'm going to choose booze, you know? So that's kind of where that's at.
Okay, we have time for about one more question. Anyone else? No? All right. Well, Eric, again, I'd like to thank you. You did a superb job, as I knew you would. And if nobody else got anything out of it, I know I did. So, and I will share, I am one of those sponsors that I do the ceremonial burning of the fourth step with my sponsees. However, before we do that, I always tell them to make sure they have the list to make their amends before they burn it up, or they have to do the whole thing over again, and they never want to do that. So, there are ways around those things. Alrighty. So, at this time, I'd like to ask, do we have any announcements from the floor, AA related?
If you're looking to get the banquet at the conference, I suggest you get your reservation. They stop taking reservations for the banquet, and then the food by the banquet.
Thanks, Jane. Okay, also, there are flyers up on the table here regarding Monday night's meeting that has moved now to Wayside Presbyterian, which is down Asbury Road. So if you want to grab some of these, get them out to the meetings. I also have flyers in my car for the women's retreat. So if any of the ladies, if you're interested in that, please see me after the meeting and I'll get you one. Anyone else? Okay, if you've asked for a card, if you can please remember to pick it up after the meeting. And if you can help us clean up so we can get out of here before the alarm goes off. And with that, I'd like to ask if we could please join in a circle and close.
I sent her Your prostate check.
And your horse, too.